Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Hey, everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace, because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now, and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF, and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and that makes this Stuff You Should Miss. Oh, did you hear Snoop Dogg's son got a football scholarship to, I think, UCLA?
Yeah, so did P. Diddy's.
No way.
Yeah, and actually, Sean Combs was the first to happen. It was about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people got upset because they were like, we shouldn't, you know, be paying for this millionaire, multimillionaire son to go to college.
I could see that.
But it was all explained. The sports guys came out and really defended it and said, it's not you paying for it. It's athletic scholarships that are earned by athletes. And it's a
they're paid for
separate,
by the booster club.
Well, probably. But it was like, basically, it's not like some kid is missing out on an education because P. Diddy's son earned a football scholarship.
Okay.
He should be treated the same. And so should Snoop Dogg's son.
Was there an outcry about Snoop Dogg's son?
Not as much, because he's the G, you see?
Right.
No one likes Puffy.
Right.
Like, I don't want to pay for that.
I don't understand. He seems like a nice enough guy.
Yeah.
He was friends with Biggie Smalls.
I was in his house once. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
I was working on a music video with him, and I had to deliver as a PA something to his home
okay. In
Beverly Hills.
Okay.
And I went to the door, and I rang the doorbell, and some really large guy in a warm-up suit
mm-hmm. And
like a Kangol hat. Invited me in and took my thing and then escorted me out.
Nice.
So I was like in the little foyer and it was like lots of white marble and I mean it could have been like the King of France living there as far as I know.
Yeah. There's like a fountain of Ciroc vodka.
It was really like pretty plush. Of course, you know, he's rich.
By took your thing, is that legal? Are you talking about everything above the board?
Oh yeah, it was like a video cassettes for the shoot or something like that.
Cool.
I wouldn't be delivering anything illegal.
Right. Well, I didn't know if he did something illegal to you by taking your thing.
Oh, no, no,
as
no.
You put it.
It was all in the up and up.
Good going, Chuck.
Anyway, I haven't been to Snoop's house yet, although I did see him one night in Atlanta.
You did?
Yeah, I can't tell that story, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll tell you after.
He lives here part-time, doesn't he?
I don't know.
He used to, I believe.
I'm not sure.
Huh.
What a weird start for the show.
Yeah, it is a little weird, especially since we're talking about space elevators.
Nothing to do with this.
It's not like we're talking about like P-Funk or George Clinton or anything
nope. Like
that, or even Bill Clinton.
Although I bet George Clinton could build a space elevator in his mind.
Right.
You know?
He has many times, Chuck. Well, I've got something. I have an actual.
Okay, a real intro?
Yeah. It seems kind of stupid now.
Let's hear it.
Well, okay. 5:57 a.m. on July 21st, 2011, about a year ago. Something big ended. Something that really helped with our childhood, like really was an icon of our childhood. I'm not even going to let you guess.
Okay.
The space shuttle program.
Of course.
The program ended.
Yeah.
It started in 1981, and it went all the way to 2011.
Yep.
30 great years.
She had a good run.
Yeah.
More than 100 missions?
135.
Wow.
And actually, there's this awesome thing on Gizmodo. You can watch all of the space shuttle launches at once.
Really?
It's just like 135 little tiles on the screen.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you know, starting from countdown to liftoff. And like, it's got everything.
Well, they probably don't have the one ill-fated attempt.
There were two accidents. One, yeah, it's there. I think
really?
I found it. And it just goes dark at about the time the Challenger exploded.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was, this was a huge deal for our childhood, but it was also, you know, a huge deal for the space program because when they launched the first shuttle, I think it was Columbia, it was the first time that anyone had ever shot a spacecraft into space and then brought it back intact.
Yeah, reusable was huge.
Yeah. We're not talking like a capsule where like Larry Hagman comes down and splashes into the sea and then gets out.
Yeah.
Because those capsules weren't reused. This was like, we have an appropriately named space shuttle.
Yeah, a space plane.
There and back.
Basically.
Exactly.
It even looked like a plane.
So it was a big deal when this happened, and it proved like, okay, we can go to space and back using the same equipment. It brought costs down tremendously.
Sure.
They're still pretty high. And then the space shuttle program ends, and everybody's like, how are we going to get to space and back now, Obama?
Yeah.
Did you think this through?
Right.
And Obama didn't say it, but I'll bet he was thinking it when he was kind of skulking away after being shouted at for basically closing NASA.
Not true.
He probably thought, have you ever heard of the space elevator, dummy?
He should say that.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to talk about, Josh. And I thought this was a thrilling article.
You thought the article itself was thrilling?
No. The concept of a space elevator.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The article itself was a little meh.
It was a little 2005-y.
Yeah, it's a little outdated, but it's pretty cool. So you mentioned the space shuttle. Even though the space shuttle took place over the span of, what'd you say, 30 years?
Yeah, 81 to 2011.
The price of getting the thing going didn't change a whole lot, which was pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
It stayed about $10,000 per pound.
Right. And they originally predicted when they were working on the shuttle program before it started that it was going to be about $50 million a mission.
Yeah.
It came to about $500 million a mission.
Yeah.
And every mission, they spent $500 million on the shuttle mission.
Yeah.
That $10,000 per pound, 90% of that is fuel.
Yeah. Is that the per pound of everything on there?
Yeah. I think it's just like that kind of equation.
So a lighter astronaut would be cheaper?
Or I don't really think it's
symbolic?
I think, yeah. I think it's more like, if you take the full weight of this.
Yeah. And divide it by the money spent.
Yes.
I get it. So in theory, a lighter astronaut would make it cheaper, but not really.
Not really.
Okay.
Because I think they had those astronauts like weighed down to the gram, exactly what they wanted them to weigh.
Sure.
Like they would probably be like, you need to excrete. Because you're about to suit up. Go excrete.
Yeah, you need to pee 6 ounces right now.
Yeah.
I'd be a great astronaut then because I can pee on command.
Can you really?
Almost always.
Okay, so I've got something for you about 6 ounces. Have you seen the little diagram of a solo cup? You know, the lines on a solo cup?
Yes.
They're measurements. The bottom one.
Are they really?
Is an ounce. The top one, so like liquor.
Yeah.
The middle one, 5 ounces. For wine. And then I'm not kidding. The lowest top band
is for port wine.
That's the 16 ounce. No, it's 12 ounces for beer.
Huh. I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's ingenious.
It is.
I love little tidbits like that. Like the amount of matches in a matchbook is equal to the amount of cigarettes in a pack.
Oh, I didn't know that. That makes sense.
Sure.
Huh.
We should just talk about those things all day instead of space elevators.
No, let's talk about the space elevator.
All right. Let's talk about it. Quickly, a space elevator, and we'll get into the specifics here.
Mm-hmm.
But what it basically is, it's a carbon nanotube composite ribbon.
Right.
Anchored to a platform offshore.
Yeah.
Way out in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And it has a counterweight way up in space, 62,000 miles. And they basically would be the elevator shaft, and they would send stuff crawling up and down this ribbon. To outer space.
Yes. Have you ever seen somebody, like a piano mover, lift a piano into a second-story apartment? That. Except in space.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I don't like the comparison to the game of tetherball here.
I thought it was a terrible, terrible analogy.
So let's just skip it.
Yeah.
Because it didn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, I think you said it. Like, basically, we're connecting a line between a platform in the ocean and a satellite up in space.
Yeah.
And we're putting something on it that can go up and down.
Yeah, and the space cool elevator. Thing of, we should just stop right there. The cool thing about this is, to me, is that every single part of this is feasible right now to do, except for the one thing that they need to do it, which are the carbon nanotubes that go 62,000 miles into space.
Yes.
They're around.
Right.
But we can't make them that long yet.
Right. There's, I think that's a really good point. Like all of this is just waiting.
Yeah.
And I saw a little video that Michio Kaku, made about this, explaining it.
I saw that.
And he was saying, like, everything's been surmounted
now.
Like, now it's all in the realm of physical possibility. There's just a few more breakthroughs, and it's all carbon nanotubes.
Yep.
Which are, we've talked about graphene before, right?
Yeah.
Strongest substance known to man or humankind.
That's right.
It's a one atom thick layer of carbon. Incredibly strong. It's like 100 times stronger than steel.
Yeah.
At about 1/5 of the weight. And a carbon nanotube is a layer of graphene rolled into a tube.
Yep. Like, it looks like chicken wire.
Exactly.
A soccer ball chicken wire.
Yeah. Like if you spread out a length of chicken wire and then roll it up,
mm-hmm.
Nanotube.
Yeah.
Carbon
and,
nanotube.
And we say soccer ball because the shape of the traditional soccer ball, not these crazy ones they're using these days.
I don't even recognize it as a soccer ball.
Yeah, but the old school soccer ball, that mm-hmm. shape is the same shape as these carbon atoms,
right.
Which is the key to its strength.
Exactly.
I've seen it described as stiff but flexible, like a steel guitar string.
Mm-hmm.
So it moves, but it's still super, super strong. And even though it's just a few atoms across, they are 10 million times as long as they are wide once you get this thing going.
Right.
So, like a guitar string.
Yeah, well, because these are nanotubes, so like their diameter is like a few billionths of a meter.
I think 1 billionth.
Is that right?
Yeah, because a nano is a billion.
A billionth.
Yes.
Yeah. But so it's very thin.
Very thin.
That's the point. And ultimately, I saw that the 62,000-mile cable would... It could be as thin as a piece of saran wrap.
Yeah.
But it would still be strong enough to not snap.
That's so crazy.
Under its own weight. 62,000 miles. Like, there is no quality of material outside of this that wouldn't just snap.
Yeah.
Like a hair. Like pulling one of your hairs in half.
Yeah. Agreed.
This one will. But the problem is you don't make... carbon nanotubes, you grow them.
Yeah, there's a really cool NOVA video, too, on YouTube, where it shows a guy in the lab pulling a braided forest of carbon nanotubes. And he starts pulling it, and you see it all, like, coalescing together. And he gets, like, 10 feet away, and then it finally snaps.
Yeah?
And then it's, like, smaller than a human hair. It just, like, floats away almost.
Okay, so that's... that's longer than I've seen. The record that I saw was 4 centimeters in length.
Yeah, well, this was, I think it was stretching. I don't think it was the original size.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So the carbon nanotubes grow, and then after, like, that's the world record, 4 centimeters, which is like 1.6 inches, right?
Yeah.
That's short.
Yeah.
And then it just
you
stops growing.
62,000 miles.
Right, exactly. One of the problems with them not being able to figure out why it stops growing is that scientists don't know why it grows in the first place. Like they have no idea. They're just like, oh, this happens when you do this.
Right.
And they figured out that there are some things like hydrogen gas in certain amounts makes it grow longer. If you do a little too much hydrogen gas, it won't grow at all. So like they're figuring this out, but they still are really at a point where they don't understand carbon nanotubes at all. They were only officially discovered in 1991.
Yeah, which is a blip in the scientific community.
But we're making headway. And like you said, once the carbon nanotube technology is able to be made into things that are maybe several meters long, or they can figure out how to basically wrap it smaller pieces together
mm-hmm.
in, like, you know how you insulate wires with plastic?
Yeah.
Something like that without the alloy coming away?
Yeah.
Then we'll be able to make this space ribbon, or the ribbon for the elevator.
The space ribbon.
Yeah.
Which essentially is going to be like they would braid these things together like a rope, correct?
Yes.
Which would still be tiny, though.
Yeah, so it'll either be like, you know, several meters in length braided together, or really short ones braided together. But either way, they're not just going to make one continuous 62,000 meters, or 62,000 mile strand.
Yeah. The one thing I didn't get, though, if it's so small, like it needs to be a certain size to have these lifters attached to it, you know? Like, it can't be a human hair.
Right.
Like that, what could you attach to that?
They have to gain traction with it.
Okay.
So, yeah, it couldn't just be as thin as plastic wrap, even though strength-wise,
right,
it could be. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
So that's one of the things they're working on, is bulking it up?
I guess so, because you have to put the lifter on it, like you were saying. So the lifter, all from now on, everything, like, this all exists. We can make this today. You and I can make it right now.
Well, let's get it into space first. What the idea is, that they would spool this thing up once they've created it.
Mm-hmm.
They would shoot it into space with some kind of spacecraft.
Right.
Once it's in space, they would start lowering it back to the Earth, toward the platform out in the middle of the sea, while it's still going out into space.
Right, they'd start lowering the ribbon.
Yeah, so it's...
But the spool would continue.
It's still going in, it's going in two opposite directions.
It'd be like some kid walking the dog.
Yeah. And eventually it gets lowered and there's a dude standing on a platform saying, "All right, back it down." And he would take it and clip it onto a sea platform. Although it would be much more complicated than that.
Think about that operation. So this platform is going to be like 400 miles from any shipping or air lanes.
Which is important.
In the equatorial Pacific.
Yes.
And a 62,000 mile long strand of rope, even. Say it's as thick as like a cable, one of the cables holding the Golden Gate Bridge.
Okay.
Imagine catching that. I mean, it's obviously not going to be some guy catching it, but still, like, there's somebody piloting a machine that, like,
I know,
and I don't know how you would move the counterweight around the spool so that you could get it near
62,000 miles away.
How are you going to get the thread?
This
is the most difficult aspect of the whole program, if you ask me.
I think so too.
Grabbing that ribbon and connecting it.
Although they act like they've got that all figured out. They're like, "Oh, if we had this nanotube that was this long, we're all set."
They're like, "Trust us."
Like they've got a guy out on a platform just sitting around
waiting
for this thing
right
to come down from space.
So that guy catches the ribbon,
mm-hmm,
ties it off, probably with a pretty decent sailor's knot.
Yeah.
And then you attach the lifter to it, right?
That's right. The lifter is a robotic thing. It basically, it's sort of like a train track. It uses these traction tread rollers.
Right.
And it would clamp onto this ribbon, and through something a little more advanced than a gasoline engine, I think, what are they using? A free electron laser to create the energy to do this.
Basically, what they're doing is they're going to put solar panels, but made of stuff that really absorbs light from a laser.
Right.
on the bottom or on the top, probably on both sides. And then they're just going to shoot lasers up and down the ribbon. And then that laser just powers. It's basically like directing sunlight onto photovoltaic cells.
Yeah.
And then converting that to electricity. It's the same thing.
Then it's just plain old mechanical energy. It's like a little motor.
Right.
That would crawl.
Right.
At 118 miles an hour, mind you. It's
right.
Not exactly a crawl.
That's 190 kilometers.
It would shoot up this ribbon into space to the final destination, which would be anything. I think that first they talked about capturing an asteroid to serve as
which is just stupid.
As the counterweight to what I think is smart, which would potentially be a satellite or the spacecraft that brought it out there to begin with.
Yeah, just unfolding or reconfiguring,
sure.
Or whatever,
like,
and then all of a sudden, bam, there's your counterweight. There's the other end of the string, right?
And, dude, that's it. I mean, after they get this going, they're saying it can basically be a constant operational elevator to the sky, lifting as much as 13 tons of payload at a time, mm-hmm. in some cases.
Yeah.
Humans, maybe?
Eventually, yeah.
Crazy.
And I guess the whole point now would be to just shuttle stuff to, say, the International Space Station.
Yeah.
Supplies, that kind of thing. Gruel, food.
Yeah.
Or if you had some sort of asteroid mining operation, you could take your daily haul to the space elevator to be brought down. The point is, this thing could be used for trips to lower Earth orbit every day.
Yeah.
Several times a day. Because I think lower Earth orbit is between 500 and 1,500 miles. So that's like 4 to 12 hours trip, basically.
And they're talking about going further than that, though.
Right, but lower Earth orbit is where, like, that's where all the action is, generally.
Yeah, sure.
The problem is that's also where all the space debris is.
Yeah, and I don't think we mentioned what the best part about all this is.
What?
Is that it would cost the closest estimate I've seen is about $200 a pound.
Oh, yeah.
To deliver stuff to outer space.
And what was the space shuttle cost?
$10,000 a pound.
Bam.
So that's why they're pursuing this, is because it's much, much more affordable. They likened it to the Transcontinental Railroad back in the day.
Right.
Linking space to Earth.
Yeah.
Okay. So the problems, Josh, avoiding junk flying around in space. Like, it would suck if you got this thing all hooked up and some asteroid came flying out of nowhere and snap this thing in half.
Well, not just asteroids. Apparently, space debris largely refers to junk, man-made junk.
Yeah.
And lower Earth's orbit is lousy with it.
Oh, yeah.
There was a satellite, an old out-of-use satellite, collided with a new in-use satellite recently and blew it up. And all of a sudden, two pieces became 4,000 pieces.
Yeah. And that's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket.
It is. So the problem is like even a small, like 1 centimeter diameter piece is a threat to the space elevator.
Yeah.
So right now, NORAD tracks things as small as 10 centimeters. Did you know that?
I did once I read this, but I was pretty shocked.
But they're going to have to start tracking stuff down to 1 centimeter. So this is another kind of challenge that I don't think people talk about, is tracking space debris. Or they're also proposing that we just go up there and get rid of it, like pay contractors to go to space and bring these things down.
And clean up our mess?
Exactly.
That'd be a unique approach.
Right.
It's called active avoidance, and it's pretty amazing that you could actually potentially, because this thing is tethered to a sea platform, mm-hmm. move the sea platform to dodge these things.
Yeah, but that would mean that there's like some guy whose job it is to like...
Yeah, joystick it?
Yeah.
That's crazy. It sounds very far-fetched, but it's supposedly not super far-fetched.
No.
I mean, this company, Liftport, mm-hmm. they're one of the private firms that have been, I think they partnered with NASA for a while until NASA, you know, their funding has dried up to a large degree.
Yeah.
So they had to scrap things like partnering with Liftport. But Liftport, as of now, I think I read in 2011, they have sort of scrapped... Or not scrapped, but they put on the back burner the space to Earth version, and they're working on a lunar version.
Oh, yeah.
So they want to put one of these on the moon, which can be done right now.
Yeah.
If they had the money.
That makes sense to me.
Not as much gravity. so they don't need the carbon nanotubes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they could use a stuff called Xylon. Mm-hmm. It's a synthetic polymer. And apparently they could, like, do this within the decade. Like, everything's in place. It's just a matter of doing it.
Wow. So, yeah, I thought about having one that goes from the Earth to the Moon, or one that goes from the Earth to Mars, or, you know, and you just...
Well, and then from the Moon to Mars, you know, you could connect them.
Right.
Like, station one is here, then you have another one that goes there. And the idea is they're going to build a bunch of these.
Right.
That's the idea. Because if one goes down because of some space debris, hey, no problem. We've got another one that we built even cheaper over here in this part of the ocean.
Right.
So that's the idea.
What's awesome is this is, I mean, this is far-reaching. It sounds futuristic. But it's actually pretty smart, simple idea, like we're just going to build an elevator that goes to space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually kind of an old idea. There was a Russian scientist named Konstantin Tsiolkovsky who proposed this in 1895.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And then it kind of went, I think everybody thought he was a crackpot for a while.
They thought Da Vinci was too, though.
Yeah.
Or actually, did they?
No, not Da Vinci.
They think he was a genius back then, too?
Probably.
Okay.
Except for his flying machine, I think that
that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
But then Arthur C. Clarke comes along and writes about this in Fountains of Paradise in 1978, and he very clearly saw, like, the big problem was the ribbon. If you could figure out the ribbon, everything else would be fine.
Which is still the problem.
Yeah.
Arthur C. Clarke, way ahead of his time.
Man.
So that's pretty much it. I mean, if they get this lunar one going, they're talking about deep space exploration from a lunar-based system, which, you know, the benefit there is it costs a lot of money to get from here to the moon. If you could shuttle the components of a rocket up to the moon and just get it going up there, it'd be a lot cheaper.
Right. We talked about that with asteroid mining, that was another idea is you could launch things from these asteroids or whatever, because a vast majority, remember 90% of the weight of a space shuttle is in the fuel?
Yeah.
Almost all of that is just used within the first, like, 10 miles.
Yeah.
Then after that, you start to escape Earth's orbit and...
Don't need as much juice.
Exactly. So, if you could get rid of all that, like, you just drop the cost tremendously.
Pretty cool stuff.
Space!
I know. I mean, I'm curious to see, within a decade, if we're going to have a space elevator from the moon to something else.
We will be riding one.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, it all depends on funding. That's, like, these ideas are all great in practice, but unless you have billions of dollars to get it going.
But think about Jeff Bezos has billions of dollars.
Sure. Elon Musk?
Kurt Cameron? James Cameron. Elon Musk. These guys have cash, and this is what they're putting their money into, this kind of thing. So I don't think it's going to come down to NASA funding. I think it's going to come down to the will of guys like Kurt Cameron.
Well, Kurt Cameron does not have billions of dollars, but he does have a fine collection of faith-based movies.
Yeah.
Direct-to-video.
I know.
That you can check out.
But not the dirty kind of direct-to-video.
No.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I guess that's about it, right?
It's pretty much. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Private space exploration is definitely the way of the future.
We should put in a request for this article to be updated, but I'm afraid to. I think they'll be like, have at it.
Yeah, I'm afraid to do that too.
Well, if you want to read a hilariously out-of-date article on How Stuff Works that still captures what's going on with the space elevator.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And with some cool artist's rendering of stuff, you can type in space elevator. That's at the handy search bar at a great little website called HowStuffWorks.com. And I said search bar, which means it's time now for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this Dead Sea Follow-Up. And I should mention, we got a lot of emails from Dead Sea visitors and tourists, and a lot of photos. And one thing we did not cover, because I haven't been there and experienced this, but we said swim in the Dead Sea a lot. There ain't a lot of swimming going on in the Dead Sea. There's a lot of floating and flailing, because they just say it's really disorienting. Huh. Because you're so used to the way you move in water, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden that's totally different.
Cool.
So people are like gasping, and eventually they'll learn to trust and relax and float on their back. You don't want to go on your stomach. Mm-hmm. You don't want to try and swim. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to get it in your face, because it will really sting your eyes.
Yeah.
And it tastes really bad. And we had this one lady that wrote in whose husband was suffering. They advise you not to go in with cuts or open sores, obviously.
Yeah.
Her husband was suffering from a little, it's called many different things. When you walk a lot and you get chafed between the legs.
Oh, yeah.
It goes by many different crude names. Mm-hmm. But he had a bad case of this didn't tell his family that he was traveling with. His wife knew. And he went in the Dead Sea.
Oh.
Promptly got out, and the family was like, where did, you know, the son-in-law go? And she was like, maybe he's just not into it. All right. So this is from Daniel, but thanks to everyone else who wrote in. Just finished the Dead Sea podcast, had a couple of interesting tidbits. You briefly mentioned the Great Salt Lake when talking about the high salinity of the Dead Sea. These two lakes actually have quite a bit in common. Both lakes are located in a desert region, although the elevation is drastically different. Like the Dead Sea, the Great Salt Lake here in Utah has a very high salt content, about 27%, making it hard for anything but halophilic bacteria and some brine shrimp to grow. This guy's a graduate student, by the way, at BYU. Both lakes are fed mainly by a smaller freshwater lake, roughly 50 miles away. Mm-hmm. The Dead Sea being fed by the Sea of Galilee to the north by way of the Jordan River. The Great Salt Lake is fed by Utah Lake to the south, also by the Jordan River. Coincidence? Not sure. In both cases, the water leaves the lake only through evaporation. And like the Dead Sea, there are many areas the Great Salt Lake that are quite stinky at times, mainly in the muddy waters, mm-hmm. where the level is low. The Great Salt Lake is also dense enough for you to float with little to no effort, so if you are not able to ever make it over to Europe to visit the Dead Sea, I would say the Middle East, wouldn't you?
Sure.
Okay. You can head on over for a float in its little American cousin out here in Utah. Keep up the good work, guys. I really enjoy the wide variety of topics. And that is from Daniel, who was a grad student at BYU studying microbiology. So good for you, my friend.
Nice.
Much smarter than I am.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Grad student, that's all I have to say.
English undergrad, microbiology grad.
That is a well-rounded human being.
Agreed.
Wait. You're the English undergrad.
Yeah.
Well, if you put the two of you together, you're a well-rounded human being.
Exactly.
If you have some ideas of how to put me and Chuck together to form another superhuman, we want to hear them. Also, if you just want to say hi or you have something cool or interesting to tell us, a great fact. We love those.
Love them.
That you'd like us to tweet.
Yeah.
Or put on Facebook. You can send those to via Twitter, SYSK Podcast, via Facebook at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow, and you can send us an email. Electronic mail to stuffpodcast@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.